Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on Thursday's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest, but before I introduce our guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and wake a friend. It's 8 o'clock. Maybe it's 11 o'clock on the East Coast, but that doesn't matter. Your friends need to see what we're talking about today because we're learning, we're laughing, and we're having a good time. So you want to go ahead and share the show, text it to them, tweet it to them, send them an inbox message, but definitely let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is on and we are live because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So I want to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Mr. Jack Siney. He is of GovSpin, and he's going to talk to us about how business owners can, you know, get some of this government contracts that's out right now. Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Sharifa. How are you? Thank you for having all of us today. Much appreciated.
You are so welcome. I'm excited to have you on the show. Everybody always tries to figure out my method to introducing guests. And I'm like, I don't know, just the spirit moves me. Like I was discussing earlier.
You said earlier, yes, yeah.
And I saw those dollar signs and I'm like, I gotta talk to Jack.
Amen.
What's going on, Jack?
Amen. Yeah, I'm coming to you from South Florida. So just trying to stay safe down here and without boring folks to tears. Sometimes I know when I meet entrepreneurs, they speak forever about their company. So I actually, quickly, my company is GovSpin, founded it about 10 years ago, and we aggregate the government purchase orders. So we go government agency to government agency, get all of their purchase orders. We find out what every government agency purchased. And what we do is we make that accessible as a software as a service. Folks can log in. And if you sell widgets, you can see every government agency that bought a widget, who they bought it from and what they paid. So if you're going after any government business, it's like cheating. And the second thing, just really quick, the one thing we really emphasize with folks, there's all these stereotypes about selling to the government, right? It's long, it takes forever, there's no profit in it. And so a lot of those are misconceptions. They're not true at all. And folks can literally, especially during this COVID crisis, win a government contract, win government business in like 24 hours. It's amazing. So there's a lot of money out there. The government's the largest prospect in the world. They spend $7 trillion a year, $20 billion a day. And so we want folks to have access to some of those funds, and it can be life-altering to your business. So that's what we do.
Okay. Well, I'm listening to you. You sound like you know what you're talking about. You sound like it. In my ears, my trained ears, it's like, he sounds like he knows what he's talking Amen. About. But Jack, I'm telling you, like, I'm the kind of person, I think a lot of people are like me, it's like, if we hear the word government, it's like, okay, red tape, I need, like, you know, 12 years of tax returns, I need, you know, 10,000 employees, and like, it sounds like an easy process, but sometimes the requirements are what keeps us out, or, you know, not knowing what we need to do, or what we should say on the form.
Yeah, so there's one stat I'll give you that's crazy. 80% of government procurement does not go through the bid and RFP process. So that thing, that 6 to 9 months, that horrible process that most folks, you know, kind of connect with government business, 80% of government spending does not go through that process. And so I'll give the viewers one place they can go. You can go to govquote.us, govquote.us. It's free. They can go to that site. You can literally see all a bunch of quotes that government agencies are putting out today, things they're going to buy in the next day or two. Folks can bid on them and literally win a government contract in the next 24 hours. So you don't have to take my word for it. You can go govquote.us. You can actually see it live. The government buys a ton of things today. They're much more automated, much more sophisticated than kind of that old school mentality that we think about. And so you can go see for yourself. You can actually log on and see a bunch of things the government's buying totally for free. That kind of that way to kind of tip your, kind of stick your toe into the government sales world. So it's a great way to kind of start the process for all the doubters out there, because I think your perception is true. Folks here at government, they're like, nah, I'm going the other way. But one other quick stat, there's about 10 million operational companies in the US, only 10% of them sell to the government. So there's a huge, again, the government's the biggest prospect in the world, and only 10% of companies in the US sell to the government. So it is a huge, huge opportunity, especially during this PPE era and during this COVID crisis. The government is buying a ton of things and they're buying them super quickly, so they can, you know, maintain their operations.
Okay, but what are some of the requirements? That's what I need to know. I have a business, for instance. I do
Sure.
I don't even know what I do at this point, but I usually do marketing and website design and all kinds of stuff, you know. But what are some of the requirements for a small business owner such as myself to actually be awarded some of these bids?
Sure. Listen, so like when you go to GovQuote, there's very few requirements. When the government needs certain skills and sets of, if they're going to spend $100 million, you're right. They want all these bells and whistles. You need all these requirements. But for a lot of things the government buys day to day, there's not a lot of requirements. You have to be a registered company, right? You need a W-9. So you need to be a formal company. The government does everything on the up and up. So you want to make sure you get your W-9, get your tax ID number. And then outside of that, anything else you would have is really beneficial to you. If you happen to be a woman-owned business, a minority-owned business, some kind of set-aside, those are all things that could help you win more government business. For a majority of things the government buys day to day, there's not a lot of requirements. There really isn't, I promise you. And again, the government buys in about 10 different ways outside the bid and RFP process. So if you submit a quote, they'll award you a contract. They'll actually buy it on a P card, just like you and I do on a credit card. They'll literally issue a credit card to you. Like if you were going to do website design and say, redo our website, it's $9,000. So a lot of times they'll put that on their credit card, their P card, they'll call it. And they'll literally do that transaction really quick without very many additional requirements from a paperwork standpoint. But again, in the federal world, just to be really quick. So federal, state, and local, the federal world is definitely more complex. If you're trying to do business with the DOD or, you know, Homeland Security, a lot more red tape. But for your state and local agencies, you can literally go to the city of Long Beach. You can go down to your city hall. You can be like, hey, listen, here's what I do. This is my service offering. And a lot of government agencies, again, are buying most of the services that we offer. The government buys everything. And they'll do it really, really quickly without all the red tape. Promise.
Okay.
Jack, that it's based on relationships with some of the government agencies.
Sure. Definitely. Listen, doing business with the government is just like doing business with the private industry. It really is. 90% of it is exactly the same. People buy from people they like, right? And you being able to build a relationship with the first that folks that work at a government agency, it is just like private industry. And again, the government buys everything. For all the folks that you know on this roundtable, they buy all of our services, including counseling, including financial advice, including IT support services. They do. The government buys everything. And it really is, so much of it is about the relationship. It's so important in any process, any sales process, right?
And what are some of the initial steps you typically take, Jack, for forming a relationship with the government agency?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't want to dominate the show, but listen. So, you know, a lot of times when the government's trying to buy stuff, listen, the folks on the procurement side, they're really at a loss to find good vendors. They're very risk adverse, right? They're not money driven. The government's not profit driven. You know what they want? A reliable vendor delivers what they say. That's what's critical about it. So when you reach out to them right now, before COVID, it was going to see them, put a face to a name, kind of old school sales, right? But now it's really reaching out via email, connecting them, sending your information, maybe creating a video, right? Putting a product, doing a couple testimonials, but putting a face to your company and having some validity, right? So having a couple references, a couple testimonials. The government wants to buy from folks that are not risky. That's their number one thing. They're not like, they don't want to lose their job by hiring a vendor that does a poor job. They'd rather overpay a little, say, hey, the citizen's got a great product. We delivered a great solution to our community. They'd much rather do that than take a risk on a new vendor. So just reaching out, tell them you've done a lot of business, you're a good company, you have great references. Those are all the things that will enable them to choose you. And again, we talk to government because we work with both sides of the house. We sell to the government and to companies. The government is in desperate need of good vendors. Like when they need to buy something, they're like, you know what they do? They go to Google. Oh my God, we need somebody to do our marketing. We need somebody to do the website. We need somebody to talk about IT support. They'll Google and try to find vendors that literally, when they're buying something new, that's what they do. And so if you're able to kind of already predispose them to your company because they know you, can be a huge, huge, huge advantage. Promise.
Yes, we definitely going to look into that, see what I can find out. I'm going to be surfing the internet today, surfing Google to find out some more opportunities for me.
Amen.
Definitely going to visit govquote.com. Since we've been speaking with her already, I want to introduce our next guest, Dr. Laura Lewis, who has After I Do Academy. She's going to talk to us about couples therapy. Good morning, Dr. Lewis. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you guys today. So I'm a psychologist here in Atlanta. I focus on helping couples rebuild trust after betrayal. And really my work started from a place of just curiosity about relationships because I know I saw a lot of divorce in my family. And so I was just curious, like, what does it take to build a happy happy, fun relationship. And so I ended up doing a lot of research when I went to Howard University. I got my PhD in counseling psychology. And so now I have a practice and I help couples to just have fun and enjoy their relationship and resolve conflict.
Yes, absolutely. The divorce rate was high enough, but I think COVID has increased the divorce rate even more. You know, what's said is we're going to have a lot of divorces and a lot of babies. You know, I'm just hoping the baby side wins, you know, and keep these families together. But what are some of the trends that you've been seeing over the last 4 months with some of the couples you've been counseling?
Well, I have had an influx of clients. I mean, in fact, it like doubled since COVID. And so a lot of couples are seeking support because they're fussing and fighting, and then they're in each other's space all day, all the time, where normally they might have a break and go to work, but now they're having to teach the kids, work, and make meals all at the same time. And so we're seeing an increase in conflict. And you know, just like with everything, we need an outlet. We need a space to be able to just go to the gym or work out. And so that's part of my work as a psychologist, is helping couples learn strategies to how to cope with stress, especially during these times. We're seeing rising rates of domestic violence during these times, because as stress increases and then people don't know how to cope with stress, then it ends up being just conflict with each other that escalates.
So what can we do?
I think some of the primary things is definitely connect with me at the After I Do Academy. And that's a resource, and it's a pretty low investment. So to be able to work with a psychologist and get support is $19.99. So it's a pretty low investment. And then other things, I think seeking counseling. You know, if I have a heart problem, I'm going to see a cardiologist. And so it's the same way when it comes to our mental health. I think as the people, we have to make sure that we prioritize our mental health the same way we prioritize going to the dentist. And we don't have to wait for the bottom to fall out of our life to get help, you know? And so then also making sure that you are like working out, you're taking breaks, you're changing your environment as much as possible in the pandemic times. And just really practicing coping skills. Mm-hmm. And as far as conflict resolution, there is like kind of a three-step process that I go through with my couples in the After I Do Academy for resolving conflict. And it really starts with hearing each other, because a lot of times, we know, I find that couples aren't really listening, but they're listening to respond.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I like that. Everything you said made sense. I just was trying to see, you know, what the different responses were during this time frame. You know, I talk about one of my friends who for the last couple of months has been talking about a divorce. And this was a couple that's been married for 10 years, from the outside appeared completely happy. But a year ago, she was laid off from her job. During COVID, he was laid off from his job. So now you have two people laid off at home, frustrated about finances, like you said, in each other's face all day. She's like, I'm done. I want a divorce. And I'm like, okay, but is this really a good time? Like, you might need him. We might need him to cut the firewood, or, you know, put the water in the well, whatever we need. Like, this is not a good time for you to get a divorce. I mean, am I wrong, Dr. Lewis?
No, I mean, I think that for a lot of people, they're making permanent decisions based on temporary moments in time. And mm-hmm. I know, like, I'm a wife. I've been with my husband for 17 years, and we have our own conflicts. We have our times when I'm just frustrated and nagging. But you can't let, like, a temporary season in your life make you make a permanent decision that next month, 2 months from now, he gets a job, and then everything kind of streamlines. Aaron's kind of like making the money fingers. Exactly. It's like we have to work together when it comes to money. When we get married, a lot of times we say till death do us part, for richer and poor. And there will be times when poor comes knocking on the door. I know I had times when I wasn't employed. My husband has had times when his business wasn't flowing. And so we have to work together, do a budget, talk about money. Don't hide from having those real conversations.
Yeah,
I feel like everybody should have a little counseling before and right after they get married, right? It's never what we think it is, right? It's never what we think it is.
I was wondering if if you deal with any kind of cultural stigmas and how you face that and how you respond to some of that. Because I know, like, in the Latino community, it is, there is a stigma behind taking care of your mental health or going to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist or anything like that. So I'm wondering, how do you handle that? And if you see that or face that with the couples that you see?
That's a great question. Y'all can't really see my shirt, but it's called Black Marriage Matters. So that's a group that I have. It's a Facebook group. It's over 5,000 couples in there. And we talk about cultural issues because, you know, everything is impacted by culture. Everything, like the way we eat, the way we talk to each other, the way we access our support, the way we speak to our family, all of that is impacted by culture. And definitely, I know, like, in the Black community, sometimes there's this idea of what happens in this house stays in this house. And we might be struggling with something. There may be abuse, incest, and it's like, well, we shouldn't talk about those things. And so people are hurting and struggling.
You don't air your dirty laundry. I didn't want to cut you off, but that's what we're told. Like, no matter what, you don't air your dirty laundry.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so then it creates this mystified view of everything is fine. And then what people tend to do is they'll look on Facebook and they'll see all the beautiful pictures of everybody happy, not really knowing what's happening on the inside. And so then we end up comparing our inside to everyone else's outside. And then outside looks great. And I know it just kind of creates this mystified view of things. And so I'm glad that you asked about culture, because I think that definitely impacts the thought process of seeking support, especially when it comes to mental health.
Mm-hmm. I think that was an excellent question. I want to introduce our next guest, Nancy Sabino. And so you are the CEO and co-founder of Sabino Comp Tech, but you also have a catering business. But when you ask about culture, some of the decisions we make in culture, typically in minority cultures, they're not looking for the CEO or founder positions, and there may be stereotypes of them taking other positions. So again, Nancy Sabino, thank you for being here with us today. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad to be on this roundtable with everyone else as well. Definitely the CEO position was not something that I envisioned in my life growing up, coming from a single parent family home, and my mom being an immigrant to this country, and so on and so forth. So growing up, it was definitely a more than likely going to be in the food industry, either a waitress or something along those lines. And I think at some point in time in my high school career, that's kind of when things shifted for me, and I started to kind of look out and say, well, why not? Why not me? And so at the age of 22, I started my first company. I can't say that I was in the CEO position at that time, but definitely once I exited that business, started my second business with my husband. And that was a shift in mentality for sure that led to that, and the realization of that is my role. Those are my responsibilities. So I'm going to fill those shoes as CEO, regardless of whether that's what I envisioned or that's what I thought, or how other people may perceive that, specifically in the IT industry.
Yes, the IT industry is one of those male-dominated industries. I remember a lot of the things that I learned about SEO and PPC, I learned working for a hosting company. But when I started at that company, none of the sysadmin wanted to deal with me. It wasn't until the manager said a sysadmin could have the weekend off as long as the supervisor was on duty. And then all of a sudden, being the only basically the supervisor willing to work weekends, I was everybody's best friend. It was like, oh, it's easy. If the server goes down, just hit this button to come right back up. I'm like, okay.
Now it's easy. Yeah.
Now it's easy. But I've been in that world, and just being a female alone, they kind of look at you like, are you serious? So why the tech industry? Why tech?
So I kind of fell into the tech industry. I started in a internship position right out of high school and for a local company. My husband also started within that same company. And so after some time, we kind of realized we could do this on our own. Mm-hmm. And that's how we took over, I guess, started our own company. But essentially my first passion was not the IT industry. I had to learn that over time in order to help when we first started up our company. Mm-hmm. And so 10 years later, it's something that I realized I love just because what I can do is translate the technology pieces over to the business aspect, which is my first love. Mm-hmm. And so kind of marrying those two ideas and bringing that forward to other business owners and being able to help them with that is what I realized that I truly love. And so that was something that was like, well, I can do that with technology for sure, because it's a skill I've learned. That's kind of what happened.
No, I think it's great. So tell us about your company. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so we are an outsourced internal IT department for small mm-hmm. businesses. We serve kind of like what you would see in an enterprise company where you call somebody up and ask for help from the help desk, except for that it's for small businesses. And we focus on security as well as compliance. So a lot of our clients are in the medical field, CPAs, and law firms. And so we help because they don't necessarily have the funds for what would be a C-level CIO or VCIO or anything like that. We take over that role as well. And so we help them make the decisions as far as the technology goes, the strategy forward once they realize how their business is moving. And then we also help on the day-to-day operations.
That's unique. I'm learning new terms during the show. The first one I learned was we don't go grocery shopping anymore. We go to get essentials. Like that's the first one. It's like our thoughts change, you know, and then with the government, it's loans that don't have to be repaid. I'm like, yeah. Isn't that a grant? You know what I mean? But it's like these new terms, but you gave me a new one. You said an outsourced internal department. I'm like, okay, it's outsourced. But it's internal.
Yeah, we act just like if we were a part of your office, except that we're not. And that's part of our culture as well. And that's why we say that it's outsourced internal, because part of the culture is to become part of your company. So you our employees are going to be like coworkers to your employees. And we find that that's important, because if it's not that way, they're not going to care as much. You're not going to have the communication as much that is needed in order to get your technology up and going so that you can make that money.
Yeah. Yep.
At the end of the day, that's what we focused on. That's what we started the show with, making that money. That's right. So we're going to go over there to govquote.com, get the money, and then we're going to get us an IT department.
Get some support, right.
Yes, we're going to get us some support. That's what I do.
And then make sure our home life's all in order so we can make it happen. So.
Yes. After I do, I got to say I do again in order to go to talk to Dr. Lewis. I'm not there yet. But I do want to introduce our next guest, who I'm sure is going to inspire me and get me all pumped up on this Thursday morning. Phyllis Williams is here, owner of Progress Promoter. She inspires and informs and ignites positive change. Good morning. Ooh, look at that shirt. Look at your shirt. They showing off the shirts today.
Good morning. Yeah, Dr. Lewis and I, we have something in common, because my first word says Black love.
I love it. I love it, Phyllis.
Yeah, we didn't stop there though. She was like Black love, Black wealth. I stopped after Black wealth. Y'all see my focus today is on the money. I'm like Black wealth. I like that. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing? It was a pleasure listening to everybody and learning.
Yeah. We want to learn too. How are you going to ignite this wealth and love and excellence?
Well, as I listened to everyone, I felt that we're all making a change in the world, but just differently. And not just with our businesses, with who we are. I can tell that you guys are very down to earth, welcoming, upbeat. So you guys are the inspiration.
I like that. So what is Progress Promoter? What does your company do?
Well, I'm a best-selling author, and my book is called The Art of Me, 30 Strategies to Discover Your Self-Worth. And basically, I focus on what I call self-fullness, and it's the components of being whole. like self-esteem, self-love, self-worth. And I believe that's all important, especially with relationships and business relationships as well. And I do that through not only writing, but also webinars and workshops.
Okay, so we don't need, Phyllis, we don't need some of those, not maybe not 30 strategies, but I need at least, you know, one or two, because I got to learn all the self-love and everything.
Oh, I think the book overall, the biggest thing is self-awareness. I think for the most part, sometimes we're not aware of our strengths and weaknesses. And once we start to be more aware of our strengths and weaknesses, our self-love and self-worth develop. And we start to, self-care is one, and we start to take better care of ourselves once we start to understand how we neglect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the typical ways that you see people neglect themselves?
My favorite way is to say no. I think a lot of times we just say yes to not be confrontational or not let people down. But out over the years of my own personal development, I think the best thing I've done is to learn to say no. Yes. And I'm a Marine veteran, so I think the first guy that was speaking, I was just thinking about how cultures can even put that pressure on you to always be ready, always be prepared, always help other people. And you do that and you're exhausted.
Yeah, I like what you said, the ability to say no, because one of the things that I taught my children and I live by is that no is a complete answer. Like, it's enough to just no for whatever reason. So I love that. I love the Black love, Black wealth, Black excellence. I love what you're doing. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Aaron Velke, and he is a serial entrepreneur. He's just going to talk to us about what he's doing right now, but he is a writer, a coach, a speaker, and he educates people on finances. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. This has been so much learning. I'm honored to be here. Absolutely.
Why didn't anybody tell me it was shirt day? Like, nobody called and said on today, y'all just left me out the party. I'm a little offended. But what does your shirt say, Aaron?
Well, this is more for me than for everybody else. I've been dealing with a variety of challenges, and today is about focus.
Yes, I love that. You know, my mentors, like, that's the word that stands out for me. You know, when we discuss strengths and weaknesses, all my mentors are like, focus, Sharifa. Like, you got to focus, because I am always all over the place. My family talks about me. I'll get some crazy idea at 3 o'clock in the morning. By the next day, I'm in a new venture and it's hard for me to focus. But talk to us a little bit about yourself and what you do, Aaron.
I'm happy to. You know, this will kind of loop in everybody because these themes really stick together, right? Let's talk about money, right? Money is a big part of our world. We're in financial education, but we like to flip it upside down. And what we've really started to do is move towards mindfulness and vulnerability, safety, social and emotional elements of money. And we've been working with typically millennials and Gen Z to make the conversation safe. Right. Not only were we not really taught how to talk about money, we were almost specifically taught don't talk about money. And what we've been doing is really looping in. So a bunch of these conversations. So Jack mentioned there's lots of opportunities here. We just have to know where to find them. Right. So then it becomes about access. We talk about that. I love that Dr. Lewis talked about vulnerability and making the conversation of money an open one that invites us to grow through it. Nancy talked about her first love being business. Like, in so many ways, money doesn't have to feel like a grind. It can feel like we're excited. And Phyllis was just talking about the inspiration, right? The movement, the motivation to move us forward often comes with this sense that we know our strengths and weaknesses. And I think our work has been helping people understand their money personality, helping people get educated, not from a sense of this is what to do, but instead this is how you are. And really just trying to flip that upside down. I've gotten a lot and gleaned a lot from what we've been talking about. And money, the conversation about money really isn't about money. It's about joy and being able to do what we value. But if we aren't clear on our values to self-awareness, how can we ever determine where to put our money?
I like what you said about money personality. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I'm curious about that.
Sure. So think of some normal tendencies that you might have. I will explain mine, right? When I'm emotionally excited, and I have been this way since I was a kid, I go spend money, right? It's a behavior pattern that exists for me. I'm like, yeah.
We just got paid. Let's go spend it.
It's got a new deal. Yay.
So and over the years, I've learned that if that is true, I need to come up with some ways to play better defense against myself, right? If I know me, then I can act and operate better. Not that I have to eliminate it. There's nothing wrong with spending money, but I can find systems that support this, right? But not everyone has that automatic movement towards spending. Someone might say, I've got money, I need to protect this, right? I feel safest when I have it and I don't want to give it up. So what we help people do is determine their money personality and then talk about, cool, what are the pros of this? What are the cons of this, right? One of them is a giver. So a giver might not be giving money away, but maybe they give time away, or they're not creating space for themselves, or they're taking a low paying job or lower paying job to do something that's very fulfilling, which should not be vilified in any way. But it does have, all of these things have pros and cons that they need to be aware of, right? So maybe it's just creating more space to say no, a power word to someone that says, hey, can you help me this weekend? Like, no, I need to keep my tank full. I'm going to stay in and do something for me. So just thinking through that, and we help people figure out what theirs is and then manage that as they grow.
Yeah. Aaron, are you selling your program to like schools, or what's the interaction with your company?
So we have, interestingly, schools and our value system don't always align, which I think is a problem for the education of young adults everywhere. We can get into that another time. But our work now has predominantly been with employers that have young teams. So one of the biggest distinctions we say is if you're a CEO or in charge of a group and you think of them as employees, we're not your group, right? But if you think of them as your team and you're all working together, then we'll come in and educate all of them with our online course and workshop sort of collectively together. I think in many ways, the conversation of money needs to be in more places. And you know, even here, this is about business and growth and change and personal values. Employers are a great place to go. Schools are a challenging place to go, but we're navigating that as mindful as we can.
Dr. Lewis, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah, so I was curious about your work with businesses. Like sometimes I find that like when it comes to like stating the rate for things, like all of these different feelings might come up. Like when I first started speaking, I would just like do a lot of workshops for free. And then when it came to say, oh no, my rate for this is, it would be like just this nervous energy. I don't know if that's something that you have seen in your work or that you help people with around like setting the rate and confidently saying what the rate for a service is.
My experience has changed over the last couple of years, but I would say the massive distinction has been moving from selling to enrolling. And the big difference is I'm not interested in getting someone to make a decision and a purchase. What I am doing is building a future with them and then going with them through our service together towards that future. So instead of putting us at odds competitive for their dollars, we're together aligning for their future. And by painting that and offering to usher that in, that's now great. We have a very different use for the money, right? It's not spending, it's investing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those small bits of language change can really open a client up or a potential client up for a different relationship.
Yes. One of the questions I have for you, Aaron, is you mentioned the personality as far as the, you know, they're emotional shoppers. They're, like you said, you get excited. People shop for different reasons. What are some of the things you do to determine their style of finances or personality?
So we've got a personality quiz that is a great origin point. And then there's a guide behind that really goes into, you know, you may see this show up when you're stressed this way, in relationships this way, in careers this way. And I think it paints towards self-awareness. But it's also a language game, right? Even the words retail therapy point towards.
Yes, that's me.
another interesting one that might be my least favorite, very common money phrase, disposable income.
Yes.
What money is not.
Yes, I love that. I have an expression like I'll be walking or be out somewhere, and I'll. And this is mean, so don't think bad.
No judgment.
Whatever. But like I'm walking, you know, I live in downtown Long Beach.
Stays at the round table.
Yes, it's safe, you know. But I'm in downtown Long Beach, and if you're not familiar with downtown Long Beach, it's like the homeless capital of Long Beach. Like all the homeless people just come here because our oceans are beautiful, right? So I'll be walking and someone will come up to me and they'll go, "Do you have any extra money?" And I always say, "No such thing. Like there's no such thing. Like all my money is my money." I don't be like, "Okay, Sharifa, this is your money and then this is extra." Like is I mean, am I wrong, Eric?
I love it. And our language says a whole lot about what we end up doing, right? Mm-hmm. Dr. Douglas, I know this has got to be a big part of your work in business, in tech, in government work, in inspiration. Words matter. And again, we are often taught not to talk about money and its purpose and its intention as if it doesn't ever have one. And carelessness with our money doesn't change the fact that it's still a purpose. We just might not have to take it.
I love the idea of thinking about it as enrolling as opposed to buying or purchasing, just because that is literally how I think about it when we onboard a new client, because it is very much a partnership and we're after the same goal, which is their business growth. And so the enrolling aspect of it makes it feel like we are on the same side and I'm not doing you a favor and you're not doing me a favor. We're on this road together with the same goal and we're going to get there together. So that's, I love that concept and I'm going to start using that from now on.
There you go.
We'd have made a difference in the world today here at the Round Table Talk Show. That's what we come to do. Now, I want to go over to Dr. Lewis for a minute. We're talking about finances. And I remember back in the day, the old school, old people used to say romance without finance is a nuisance, right? Like that was the expression. I don't know if everybody else heard that, but that's the key. When you are speaking to the people, the couples in couples therapy, is finances one of the most difficult aspects for them to discuss? Because so often we have, like the married couple that's going through this, my friends, he has his entire check. She pays the bills with the check. He has no idea what's going on. And sometimes they argue more because, you know, he doesn't know where the money is going. But finances, I know, can be in a relationship.
Yes, that is a big one. That is a big one. The number one reason why couples divorce, though, is communication. It's not finances. It's not sex. It's communication. And a lot of times couples have problems communicating about money. And I love that you had asked about, well, do you work with couples like after marriage, before marriage? I do see couples before marriage as well. And I find that the couples who do premarital counseling and they're talking about money early on, it puts them on so much of a better landscape because they know, okay, these are our financial priorities. We're going to focus on buying a house, or we're going to talk about if we spend over, I mean, you set an amount. For some couples, that may be $100. It's all relative to where that couple is financially. But just having conversations about how we spend the money, how we look at money. And a lot of times, it's emotions attached to all of this. And it's our family financial history that can be attached to some of these things. Like for some couples in their family financial history, they didn't buy any name brands. Like that was a luxury that was not on the table. And then for another person in the partnership, they may feel like, well, no, I want the Jiffy brand of peanut butter. Like that's important to me, the Jiffy brand. And so it seems like kind of a minor issue, but I see couples have huge fights over these like seemingly like minor financial issues.
I was gonna say the analogy always I've seen is like that when we bring our luggage with us, right? We enter into our relationship and exactly. We don't always know it, right? We have a backpack and two pieces of luggage and they're kind of hidden and we bring them in with us and we never talk about them until they play out in real life and you're like, ooh. And so yeah, I'm as somebody who's been married almost 20 years, it's the communication piece, premarital, and I don't know how people get through in marriage without some counseling. An outsider to neutrally say, here's what's really happening, because we always think it's bias, right? So it's having someone like yourself to help navigate the waters, I think is so, so, so important for a long-term successful marriage, no doubt.
Yeah, and I think just really talking about this is what matters to me. Like, maybe I can't get everything on my priority list, like financially, but this one thing, if I could just have a gym membership, but just like having conversations about it early on and not being afraid to have those conversations. And sometimes you really do need a third party. Like, you really do need somebody to help facilitate these conversations, because here's the thing, you don't know what you don't know. And for a lot of premarital couples, they don't even know that they should be talking about money. They come to me and they're like, Dr. Lewis, we sent out the invitations. We're getting married on this day. We just need to get through these like couple of sessions so you can sign off on our premarital counseling checklist for getting married, and then we're done. And then when we start talking about things like money, it's like, oh wait, I didn't know that you felt like we should be responsible for taking care of your mother if she gets sick. I didn't know that that's how you felt. And so that's why having a therapist makes a huge difference to facilitate some of these difficult conversations.
I think I was just thinking, oh sorry,
no go ahead.
I was just thinking how wonderful it would be to go into a couples therapy session or premarital session with the self-awareness of how you spend, and then also knowing how your partner would spend. That would make the communication a little bit easier to have once you go and talk to a counselor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think it's just about having that conversation. I think you can tell, because when you're willing to have that conversation, that means that you already understand that this is not going to be a perfect road. I think, and I've seen so many people go into the marriage more focused on the wedding than the actual marriage.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. Sharifa, you just said something right
there. Am I preaching today?
Preaching, girl. Yes. Like, I've seen couples spend tens of thousands, $20,000 on this day, and it's one day that then now they're broke and they don't even know how they're gonna like pay for like their living. But it's kind of like, oh, I want to have a nice wedding, I want to invite everybody, and then not even investing in therapy, or feeling like, oh, I don't have time for that, or I don't have the resources to put towards that. And so it's interesting to me sometimes, like that is so much preparation for this one day, but not really preparing for the marriage.
Instant gratification, right? I want it now, and I want to. This will send a message.
No, small wedding, go buy a house.
Yes,
yes.
Life advice for free. Small wedding, go buy a house.
Yeah. One part of my selflessness points is self-discipline. So I think before you join somebody, you have to be self-disciplined. And it also ties into Aaron's objective of a better understanding of money and your personality in it. So we have to be disciplined too.
Yes, I definitely agree. Aaron, one of the things do you see when you're speaking to people is how they've been taught about money? I mean, because either we've learned from our parents' bad habits, or we've learned because our parents didn't address money, they didn't discuss it at all. So we go out into the world, because I'm one of those people that believe that more than just math and reading should be taught in our school system. I think we should be taught budgets. I think we should be taught a little bit more than, you know, put these kids out into the world. So what have you seen, Aaron?
Well, first, high five for that, because I think this should be a skill that we build. One of the exercises that we do, so we've got an online suite of courses and content that is really a starting point to then bring people into the community where they can safely talk and build and grow. But one of the things we ask is, you know, what's your first memory of money? Because there's a lot of imprinting that goes on. But not only do we have parental influence, we have environmental influence. So we ran a program here in Baltimore in the inner city. And one of the young women was like, you know, money is evil. I've seen it corrupt my whole neighborhood. It's hurt my family. It's hurt my friends. It's hurt everything around me. It can't be good. And we had a long conversation about it. It was a really beautiful one, but her truth was real, right? It had taken a lot from her, this like chase for money. But what we eventually kind of worked through was, if you're presented with an opportunity, a good job, where money is being provided for you, would you run towards it or away from it because of this stance that you have on money? And I think that's the work, right? Very similar to therapy. This is very much about how we as business owners relate to money, right? I know business owners that have gotten to their first big check or their first big opportunity, and they're not comfortable with it and squander it or waste it or misstep. And all of these things have to do with those very early memories. My father used to give me no limits with my money. My mother would say, no, right? All no's or freedom. And when I got to college, mom wasn't there. So I would spend all the time. And those habits become patterns, become so far ingrained that they're no longer, we don't even get to.
It's the stories you hear about all the lottery winners, right? You can win how many millions. If you're not prepared to handle it, you're broke. You're more broke, 12 months later than you were when you started, right? So that's just a real thing.
And Jack, I think to your point, we like to think, because of the way media pushes a narrative, I see that individuals observe money as a talent, and it's a skill. You can build it. You can learn it. You can build the discipline in. You can build in the awareness. And it takes time and it takes help and mentorship and coaches and therapy. You can get better at business, right? You don't start out good at business. I didn't start out. I don't even know if I'm there yet.
I don't think we all at the same place. I'm like, I don't know if I'm there yet. This is just what I do, what I enjoy. This is my life, but I don't know if I'm there yet. But when you discuss money, a lot of it goes towards our beliefs. I mean, there's a, we talk about the love of money is the root of all evil in reference to the conversation you had with the young lady. There's an expression that says it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than it is for him to get into the eye of a camel to go through the eye of a needle. It's like all these expressions that we create about money and finances. And on the other side, you just have people that go, the law of attraction. Like that's the counterbalance of it. Like just focus on the law of attraction. Yes. Yes, Erin. Yes. Yes. Are we on the same page, Erin?
In a lot of ways, the law of attraction is a powerful concept, right? I'm big on process, leads, not lags, right? If you do the right things over and over and over, let go of the results, you'll eventually get there. And with any business, whether you're going for government contracts or looking to enroll new clients, most people would stop if after five individuals, you get all no's.
Yep.
And successful individuals know the difference between a small pattern and a big pattern. Small pattern, five no's consecutively, doesn't mean your product is not valuable. It doesn't mean you're not valuable. It just means you need a different tactic. And that's all about putting in 100 phone calls, similarly with practicing and learning and reading about money or therapy or discipline. Like self-discipline is hard.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Preach that.
And
we have some church up in here today.
Yes.
But we look at self-discipline as though it's a place, right? When I'm disciplined, it's just a simple decision now that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think sometimes that self-discipline is affected by our emotions. One of the things that I talk about is I launched this show on March 30th. And from March 3rd to March 30th, my mindset was, I have to get ready for this show. I have to start drinking my water. I have to start doing my walking. I did a 5-day juice fast. I was like, I'm going to be ready to do this show. And then March, COVID happened, and I was at McDonald's getting mocha frappe.
Amen.
Because I needed to feel better. You know what I mean? I needed to feel, don't act like I'm alone. Somebody out there was getting something to make them feel better. Jack, what you buy? I know you buy.
You know what's crazy is that my wife and I were talking the other day. It is amazing. Whatever plans people had in January, just think about we were moving and our logistics and my new job was like an hour away. Then COVID happens and now we work from home and I never have to commute. So it is so amazing what COVID has done to flip everything on its head. And it would have been unfathomable. So many of the things that will stick with us now, right? How we do education, how we do meetings, how we work from home will forever be altered. And none of us, if somebody would have told you, we'll shut down the economy and we'll all be working from home. I mean, you'd have been like, no, you're crazy. Like, what have you been drinking today? Now it's all, that's what we live every day, right? All day, every day. So it is crazy what's happening. And the implications will be here for a really long time. So.
Yes, Phyllis, did you make a change, a pivot? Did you start doing some emotional shopping?
I think my biggest addiction has been ice cream, but I actually lost 10 pounds since I've been
is that the ice cream diet? Because I've never heard about that.
I work out. I used to in the past, so I work out and I eat ice cream. I do it both.
It's like a new thing. Like, I remember once I made a post on social media and I told people, because I just lost a lot of weight. This is like years ago, and I posted on Facebook. I just came out with it. I was like, yes, I lost this weight. I was on the ice and air diet, right? And so people were posting and commenting. They're like, what is this diet? I gotta get it. I'm like, I just made that up. Like, but that was the only thing I could eat during this whole keto diet, was like ice and air. Like, that's all you get. I was like, but it wasn't a real diet. I just kind of made that up just for fun. Nancy, I know you had to have done something to make, you know, get those emotions going.
Therapy, now I saw it come from Nancy's face.
I don't know if I want to talk about this.
That transition for us was a little tough, in the sense that there was a lot of moving pieces. So I have two kids. I have a 15-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son, and I had to scramble, get them to, you know, school from home, and then make sure that my team was taken care of and that they were going to be settled at home as well, and then our clients. And so thankfully there was some of our clients that were already prepared to work from home, and then others that we had to quickly get them up and going. So it was definitely a lot of stress, and I'm the type of spender that I'll spend my money on food. And I've done that ever since I was young. So it's like, I want to celebrate something. Mexican dinner and margaritas, everybody, you know, that kind of thing. Want to share it with other people. So then I'm like, I'll buy lunch for everybody. And my husband's like, yo, calm down.
And I'm Aaron, like, has you, the food feels... spender. Aaron has you.
Yeah, food I'm spender. A food spender. So that's what I was spending my money on, and I gained the weight to show that. So now I'm on the journey to lose it again. So
what did you spend on, Dr. Lewis?
For me, what did I spend money on? I've been eating a lot, y'all. Like, I have been eating so much. And I weighed myself and I gained 10 pounds. I'm like, I'm going the wrong direction. And so I'm trying to get back into the habit of working out, drinking water, getting on, what did you say, the ice and air diet.
Right.
But it's been an adjustment, you know, since COVID. I'm used to going into the office, seeing my clients face to face, feeling, seeing them. And then now all of our sessions are virtual. And so that's definitely been an adjustment. And so, yeah, but I think we're pivoting well. I have a team of about 10 people. We're doing all our meetings virtual. And so it's been a major, major adjustment. I was scared, y'all. I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna manage it, but we've been rocking and rolling somehow. So,
but for the long term, do you like it? Would you now mix, instead of being all face to face, now you've experienced the virtual thing? Is that going to be part of your rhythm now? You know what I mean? Like,
you know, that's a good question, Jack. Because
now you got clients all across the country now. Yeah, you got clients everywhere.
I have an office space and I pay for it, a lot of money, my office suite every month. And now I'm like, do I really need to pay for this space? Like, if we're working virtual, you know? And so, because I love to travel, like my husband and I, we took 6 months off and traveled all around the world a few years ago. Now it's making me think about that again. Yeah. I'm like, you know, maybe we could do this. Like, we can just not have to go into a physical space and still do transformational work with our clients without being in a physical building. So, yeah.
That rent could go towards more trips.
Yes, I like that plan.
Yeah. Or we could always put it back into our business. You know what I mean? Put it back into our work to grow it and get in more business. Yeah. I've had so much fun today. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching the show live, as well as everyone who's watching the show in the archive, and simply allow them to know or tell them what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we are going to start with you, Nancy.
Awesome. Well, thank you. One thing that business owners don't realize is that technology problems start from the foundation and the initial design of their technology. And so that's something that I urge any business owner to take a look at, the issues that they're having and how that reflects on how their technology was built. A lot of everything that we talked about today has to do with how that's set up between how you're going to make your money and whether you have that self-awareness of the issues that are going on and so forth. And so I urge you to take a look at that. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those for you. And you can, I'm sure that you'll post our contact information and all that, but regardless, you can go to sabinocomptech.com to learn more about us.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, Phyllis.
Awesome.
Phyllis, you're on mute.
Okay, sorry. Since we've been in quarantine, I know a lot of people have spent a lot of time with themselves. So I just hope we reflect on ourselves and look at our self-discipline, our self-care, and how we want to grow, because you can still transform despite these troubling times. If you would like to connect with me, you can connect with me on progresspromoter.com or my podcast is livingtheprinciples365.com.
I love it. Definitely check out your podcast and what you have going on. Living with ourselves, that's the key. We've been living by ourselves for a few months. So let's see, Aaron, what do you have for us?
If you're a business owner and you've got a team that you believe would be bettered by some financial education, be more productive, less focused on their stresses, we would love to be a part of their financial journey and education. If you yourself feel like this is the time where your stresses, emotions, and all of these triggers financially are causing you a lot more loss than gain, now's a great time to get educated. And if there's anything related to money in your business or in the lives of your employees that we can help with, our website is ortusacademy.com, O-R-T-U-S. That's Latin for revolution. And we would love to be supportive of their future in your business. And I think when your business is a financially intelligent one, everybody wins.
Amen.
I like that. Jack, what do you have for us?
I'm going to give you three websites. Listen, the government's the largest prospect in the world. What industry would you go in and say, oh, that's the largest prospect, and not try to sell them? So don't let your stereotypes of doing business with the government keep you away. You can go to, I mentioned govquote.us, totally for free. You can see all quotes that are out there now, business you can win the next couple of days from the government, even though it sounds counterintuitive. Second, if you want to take the next step, you can go to govsalesuniversity.com. It's a set of online courses actually teach you how to sell to the government if you want to. And then this thing behind me, you see my main company is GovSpend. Once you start selling to the government, this aggregation of purchase orders, we can tell you exactly which government agencies are buying whatever you sell. We'll give you the name, title, contact information for the person you're trying to contact. So we will connect the dots for you. Those are the three ways we'll make it super, super efficient for you, I promise.
Okay, so myself, and for the people who are taking notes, I just want to make sure that I have them all. I have govquote.us.
Got it.
Govsalesuniversity.com.
Got it.
And then govspend.com.
You got it. Perfect.
Okay. I took notes. I'm going to check them out after the show. Thank you,
amen,
Jack.
Amen. Yes, yes.
I like Jack. Dr. Lewis.
I just want to say, Sharif, thank you so much for creating this space for us to have these type of conversations. Yeah, I want to connect with all of you guys online. I love the quote that says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Sometimes it's the darkest hour just before dawn, but we can change that when we change our mindset, when we change our thoughts. And if you'd like to connect with me, then go to afteridoacademy.com.
I love it. afteridoacademy.com. I just want to thank you all for being my guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I definitely appreciate you. As I always say, there are so many other places in the world that you could have been, and you decided to come here and be with us. So I want to also thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live. Please support our guests. I put their website in the Facebook post so you can check them out, but please don't just watch the show and visit their websites, follow them on social media, share the show, because we've given so much information here today. And I definitely believe that this information is life changing. All of our guests, each of our guests brought information that if you listen to and you follow, will change your life today. So go ahead and check them out and send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at AskSharifa.com. Until tomorrow, until Friday, until TGIF show, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now. Amen.